You're listening to If You Only Knew with Dr. Debbie Strom, and I am so, so blessed and honored to have Bucky Brooks. Yes, the Bucky Brooks from UNC Tar Heel, but also from the NFL Network. And Bucky and I are going to have a conversation. And actually, the light is going to be spun back to me because I think If You Only Knew with Dr. Debbie Strom is a great way to meet some wonderful people from all across the country, in fact, all across the world, who have interesting stories. But today, we're going to have you hear my take, my perspective. Welcome, Bucky.
Hey, thanks so much for having me on, Dr. Stroman. This is a fantastic opportunity. Like, I've known you, obviously, but a chance to really get down and really know how you've become the person that you've become and how you become one of the most impactful influencers when it comes to young people and those when it comes to race and sports. And so I'm excited to kind of take the mic from you and put it in front of your face and have you kind of tell stories. And so I kind of want to start off because I would like to really understand your background and where you come from. I know athletics has been a big part of your life, but just kind of walk us back to how you got to this place using athletics.
Well, thank you for that. Because as you know, it starts as a youngster, you know, being an athlete. I came out of the womb as an athlete. You know, I was playing every type of sport possible. And to this day, I would say kickball is still my favorite sport.
But, I love it.
Yeah, I was balling, playing football, playing basketball, softball. In fact, in school, going from elementary to high school on a formal team, I played basketball. I played softball. I did a little track and field. I even tried field hockey for a little bit. Was a football manager in high school. So that's why I still, in terms of observation and watching sport, I love football the most. And then when I got to UNC, and I know we're going to go there, but as a graduate student at Chapel Hill, I was actually on the lacrosse team. And this lacrosse team became officially the varsity lacrosse team. Because when you grow up outside of Philadelphia, lacrosse is big. And yes. I was busy with my other sports, but I've always loved that sport. And so yeah, it started as a young age, just being out there competing. And, you know, we had a wonderful neighborhood and all the kids would get out and play. And I was definitely one of the ones out there.
You know, because we always hear about the lessons that athletes are able to learn from sports and how they can apply them in their lives post-playing career. But for young ladies playing sports and participating in athletics is very, very beneficial. What are some of the lessons that you learned from participating in athletics that helped you become very, very successful?
Well, the biggest one is being a competitor. And you know, as an athlete, when you have that competitive spirit, you don't quit easily. And so I persevere and continue until all possibilities have been exhausted. And I think that's a big part of my life now. I like to say I'm not that competitive, but my friends, family say, oh, no, you are very competitive. You like to win at everything. I would say the other thing is teamwork. You know, being blessed with athletic gifts, oftentimes it's very easy for me to spot someone who's not as talented and not as gifted. And so I believe in team. And so even as a youngster, when I was usually one of the captains to start the football game or basketball game or whatever, I would oftentimes pick someone to be on my team early on who wasn't as skilled and still talking smack, as in, we're still going to be. Right? So I believe in teamwork. I believe in everybody has a role to play when you talk about a winning organization. And I think those are the two biggest. I would say teamwork and just being competitive and never quitting.
You know, because you were able to take your experience in athletics and then go into the business world, I am not surprised that the traits that or the lessons that you said you learned from athletics were things that consisted around competitiveness and teamwork. Because in business, a lot of it is about understanding that there's a bottom line, there's a result, they keep a scoreboard in some way, shape, or fashion. And then teamwork, can you find a way to cooperate with your business partners or leaders or sales people, staff, or whoever that is in business that you get along with. And so in thinking about that, because we are at a major turn in history where we're seeing the rising of so many groups. We're seeing minorities have bigger voices. Within that minority, we're seeing women and young ladies have bigger voices, not only in athletics, but also in the business world. When you think about all of those lessons and the things, are you surprised that now we're at this moment where people feel empowered to utilize their voice and really show that their skills are applicable in any form of life?
Well, I think the power of media, you know, it tells the stories, it creates the narratives, it reinforces narratives. And one of the narratives out there is that the country has been awakened. And I'm talking about racial matters with the George Floyd murder. But people have been protesting, people have been working towards racial justice, for social justice, for centuries. You know, whenever you have a dynamic when people come together, this is my belief, that there's a group of people who want to have control and they want to influence and they want to call all the shots. And then the rest of the people, some just fall right in line and others say, no, there's a better way. We need shared governance. We need shared resources. And so there's always been pushback. But with the media today, and again, the advances of technology, we can shine the light on the WNBA and what they're doing. We can shine the light now on a Venus Williams who fought for pay equity in women's tennis. You know, we can shine a light on, you know, the various athletes, the various coaches and administrators who are lifting up their voice. But it's always been happening. And I'm glad that we have the technology now and the ability to create our own stories, right? We've got the Players Tribune. We have folks in the athletic world who have money, who are now creating their own media platforms. You don't need to wait for traditional media to tell your story and to tell your truth.
You know, it's interesting because you are a part of what I would say a very influential place to me, University of North Carolina, and you talk about activism and activism with athletes speaking to the social issues. I can remember taking a class, a political science class at Carolina, and we openly discussed, I discussed the 1968 Olympics in Mexico City and the protests with John Carlos and Tommy Smith and the demonstration that they made on the podium and how that movement was fueled by Harry Edwards. Recent years, like I would say like during my time in school in the 90s, athletes weren't expected to be activists. It was a push. It was the urge. We need you to utilize your voice. What do you think has shifted where athletes are now more comfortable being in that role where they speak to the issues that they've experienced in their own communities?
Well, there's no doubt that influencers make a difference for young people. And I think there was a period of time where you had a prominent athletes like Bill Russell, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Arthur Ashe, you know, people who the spotlight was on them and they were taking the time to use their platform. And so we had civil rights, we had protests going on. But you saw, you know, a lot of young people in that space. And I don't know if we had an absence, you know, whether it was the 70s or 80s, but I don't recall many prominent athletes who were black or brown who had that microphone and who were being very vocal and media was following them, because that's a big part of it. The media has to give you the spotlight. But today, talking about influencers, there are so many to choose from. And so today, I think the young athletes, the college athletes, have people that they can point to, and they're given tools. They're given tools because we have smartphones, we have our own accounts on social media, we're learning how to connect with people through LinkedIn, and using different ways that we can connect and get information. So the young athletes are much more, they're bolder. Now, are they where we need them to be in terms of their own survival and thriving? No, but we definitely see many more of them are coming together and saying, hey, I have something to say, or I want to take a position on this.
You know, you brought up 2 points and 2 initiatives that I think are very, very important in the community. One, when you talk about Maya Moore, criminal justice reform, because we all have been impacted by typically having someone within our family or extended family that has been a part of the system. The second part is voting rights and that initiative and just trying to understand how important it is. So I want to tackle criminal justice first. When you see a Maya Moore speak on some of the things that we may say are inherently wrong with the system, where do you think not only the courage to talk about it, but the knowledge and wisdom to provide an educated perspective come from? And how can we get our young people to really know more about those issues?
Well, there's no doubt that when a microphone is put in front of you, you have an opportunity to share your truth and lift up other folks in terms of what they're saying about the matter. What gets dangerous is when you have a prominent athlete, coach, administrator who speaks and has the nation's attention, and they don't have the correct knowledge. They don't have the information. And so I'm glad that they have the microphone, but I continue to hope that more of our most powerful, influential folks in racial and social justice will say, this is what I know. And if you want to know more, you need to call this person. You need to go to this website. You need to look at this data that's being produced. Because what people will do who are working against change, who are working against racial justice, will try to make that person seem like they're dumb. They'll try to embarrass them. They'll try to trick them with some research that may or may not be true. And so I'm hoping that more influencers will say, I'm not an expert on this, but this is my truth, and here's someone that you should speak to. Now, there's lots of education and research around this. I'm very excited to be a part of the Advancement of Blacks in Sports. It's a new organization that's been formed that's going to do just that. It's going to provide education. It's going to provide the data from top scholars from all across our country who are speaking to this inequity, to the disparities that are happening. We have to do more work in this space so that we can have more healing, we can have collaborative decision making, that we can advance as a people, as a nation.
You know, it's funny because you talk about education and people having basically what I took from that mentor. If I want to be active in the community, I want to shed the light on things that are near and dear to me, I need to seek out mentors to be able to help. It appears that LeBron James has certainly sought out enough mentors to kind of help him drive this voter registration push that he is really focused on. When you're around campus and you see young people, because young people 18 or older have the right to vote, do you believe that the tide is turning where they're understanding their power and their influence just by electing to use their right to vote?
There is no doubt they've become aware and they are working for change. And I'm not here to paint, you know, one side, whether you're red or you're blue, but the idea is civic engagement, and that's happening for sure. You know, we need more critical thinking, more critical analysis in terms of what are the topics, what are the concerns that matter. You know, I don't think anybody should be against environmental justice, right? That affects everybody. But isn't it sad that, you know, we can go to almost any place in our country and purchase unleaded gas, but yet there are communities in our country that don't have unleaded water.
Mm-hmm.
So this is an example of things where it shouldn't matter what your political party is. There are things that require young people to pay attention. And yes, it is happening in a big way. And again, the power of the media, social media. Now we can know what's going on, you know, across the world and get involved with that and be supportive and help.
We have seen that without certain sports that the university is not able to necessarily function in certain capacities. It can't fund other sports. And so when you think about the racial demographics of the sports that are the revenue sports, basketball and football, you're seeing that Black and brown bodies are really upholding the athletics, yet the coaches don't necessarily look like them. And so when you think about their relationship and you think about the recruiting process and how these coaches go into these living rooms and talk about being father figures and the like, should we put more on our coaches from an expectation of developing well-rounded people as opposed to just athletes?
Yes, yes, yes. Not only from the perspective of them being that surrogate parent away and you have a responsibility, but also just thinking about the optics of it all. You're exactly right. The data said that brown and black young men, 18 to what, 22, 23 years old, are funding non-revenue sports. And some people like to call them country club sports, the golf, the tennis. They're being funded off of the backs, off of the labor of young black men. That's the truth. And so what can we do to make sure we have shared resources, shared power, and so that we can empower these young men to have more of the college holistic experience? Now, some people would argue, well, you know, they're getting a scholarship. Well, you have to provide things that are, the compensation has to be in a currency that they value. And when you are thinking about the NBA or the NFL, because you, many of them have those type of gifts, not that they'll all make it, we know the numbers, that they won't, but they're 18, 20 years old and their mind is right there. Can I be a pro athlete? And so to say that taking this physics course or taking this American history course is going to be a priority, that's absurd. They'll go to the course and they'll try their best, but their bodies are tired, their minds are tired. And so we can't expect them to be 100% present. Now, do we have many who do a good job? Absolutely. We've got scholar athletes, but I'm talking about the collective. And so how about giving them a currency where when they're 25 years old or 45 years old or 65 years old, when they can have that education and they can do all those things that don't cost them a cent. And now I know there are programs out there who say, we do that now. I've done my homework, and it's not as easy as it appears to be a part of those programs. Athletic departments make it very difficult. Yes, I'm saying this. Athletic departments make it very difficult for those alumni athletes to come back and participate in the education process. And so, yes, coaches need to step up in this space. They need to do more. They can do more. And, you know, I'm encouraged by some coaches who are now taking, they're being educated themselves in this space. And so we have a long way to go, but I do stay encouraged.
I want to get this last question out before I pivot to something else. But of late, we're seeing prominent Black athletes, basketball players, openly discuss the possibility of going to HBCUs because of what is going on and wanting to maybe keep their talents within the community. What do you think about that idea of young athletes committing to going to historically Black colleges and universities?
I think it's a positive move. But I'm a realist, and it's not going to happen in large waves. I know this system, and I know the attractiveness, the carrots of playing at a major university. HBCUs are challenged funding-wise, and so you're not going to have the same resources. You're just not, and that's a fact. And so a lot of young people, when they've got the thoughts of, you know, maybe a year I could be in the NFL or the NBA, and I want to have the best facilities, the best strength and conditioning, the best nutrition possible to prepare myself. So what I propose is that to help HBCUs, again, it's great if you sign with an HBCU, but at the very least, have an HBCU in your final five. And so that way, the cameras, the media, other coaches, other organizations will learn about a Hampton. They'll learn about a Howard, a North Carolina A&T, a North Carolina Central. They'll learn about a Florida A&M. So more people in our country will know about these very, very important institutions that are doing yeoman's work, right, from day one when they were established, because white colleges and universities did not allow Blacks to attend. And so just put them in your finalist pool, even though you probably will end up at a major Power Five school. So that's my thought on that.
You know, it's interesting you talk about bottom line and results. Can we talk a little bit about what diversity brings when you're sitting at the top level? Meaning not just diversity of race and ethnicity and gender, but just having a kaleidoscope of people that are sitting at the table when decisions are made. Why is that important to have various perspectives?
Well, when you're trying to solve something, you want as many perspectives, theories, thoughts as possible. If you walk into a room, into an organization or a team, and everybody looks like you, and everybody has the same background, it's pretty strong that you're not going to have a good solution. You might have one that makes everybody happy, right? Because everybody is, you know, thinking the same. But in terms of actually affecting change and bringing about the best possible result, odds are you're working from a deficit. And so that's why it's important to have diversity, diversity of thought, diversity of background, experience. And generally that comes with working with people who don't necessarily look like you, who don't necessarily speak your same language, who might not have grown up in the same hometown or gone to the same schools. And so that's why we always want to think about diversity, meaning variety. You know, I don't like the phrase, you know, melting pot, because we know what happens when we melt things and who gets melted. I believe in a salad bowl, where every piece of that salad bowl brings value, whether it's the lettuce, whether it's the radish, whether it's tomatoes, the onions, the sunflower seeds, the cucumbers, everything brings value. And so that's why I think diversity is important.
Dr. Strowman, it's been a fantastic conversation. Any final thoughts before we wrap?
Well, I want to thank you. You know, I think it's tough to kind of have the spotlight shown on myself. I just want to talk about you and all your amazing accomplishments. But, you know, it's all about connecting with people.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me on and allowing me to play the lead role for one.
Thank you, Bucky.